As we age, we become more aware of memory lapses, and those past the age of 65 begin to wonder if Alzheimer's is a cause. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. It's estimated that 5.7 million people in the country have Alzheimer's, and it is expected to reach 16 million by 2050. Officially, there's no cure for Alzheimer's, only ways to slow down its progression. But Dr. Timothy Smith has written a new book entitled Reversing Alzheimer's: How to Prevent Dementia and Revitalize Your Brain, and we have him on the phone this morning. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So how did you get interested or involved with this idea of perhaps reversing Alzheimer's? I understand it has to do with your mother.
Well, it actually did start with my mother. It started actually quite a few years earlier, in a sense, in the 70s when I graduated. I graduated from medical school in 1970, and when I started my internship, I looked around, and medicine was, to me, sort of a disaster. There was a lot of slashing and burning with drugs and surgery, but not much healing going on. And so I got real interested in alternative medicine back then. And my career has been an amalgamation of alternative-minded thinking combined with a mainstream Western family practice approach. So in 2001, my mother got Alzheimer's disease, and we had nothing to treat her. I went to the books. I thought we can find something, but there was no treatment of any kind. And it actually turns out, and we can talk more about this later, but for 110 years since Alzheimer discovered his disease, there has been no treatment that worked. Not a single patient has been cured in any way, shape, or form. And my mother was just back in 2003, was the most recent disaster in that long, long succession of failures, of treatment failures. So it was very frustrating, and I did the best I could, but there really wasn't anything in terms of drugs or treatments that would work for her, and she died. She died having once been a very successful woman with a great brain. She was an English professor and writer of several books, and she couldn't tell you her own name at the very end. So, and it's so sad. And I felt sad for a long time, and fast forward about 11 years later in 2014, my mother-in-law, my then 95-year-old, now she's turning 100 in February, mother-in-law handed me a paper, and she said, "Tim, you might be interested in this." And it was a research study by Dr. Dale Bredesen, a famous neurology researcher, who had shown that you could cure Alzheimer's. He cured 9 out of 10 cases in a pilot study. And I looked at this, and I was just astonished. I thought, no one's ever done this before, and this is kind of not the most front line journal, and so this discovery, as I saw it, was sort of buried in literature. And I read the study some more, and I had another realization, another epiphany, and that was the kind of medicine that I'd been studying since back in the 70s when we were going to lectures by Linus Pauling and others and doing alternative-minded medicine, now called functional medicine. That form of medicine is what he applied and what allowed him to accomplish what had not ever been accomplished before, and that was finally curing Alzheimer's. So I got very interested, and sorry for the long story, but that's how I came to write this book.
What kind of treatments did they try with your mother?
Well, there wasn't anything, really.
They did anything at all?
They tried an antipsychotic drug, I forgot the name of it, and she took about one pill of that and said, "It makes me feel sick," and it doesn't work anyway. There was nothing that would work to actually stop the progression of the disease.
So give me a sense, first of all, before we get into it, about the history of this disease. I mean, how it was discovered and how science has really sort of struggled to deal with it.
Well, it's a long and a really kind of upsetting story. Alzheimer presented his first paper in 1905. He wasn't the first person to see dementia, but he was the first person to describe it accurately and to single out an early-stage case of it, and Emil Kraepelin, his mentor, decided that Alzheimer's should get his name attached to the disease. This is back in the early 1900s, back then, and really up until the 1950s, 60s, we had no idea what was going on inside of nerve cells, so it really wasn't possible to find a treatment or a cure. There wasn't even much attempt to do it, and the disease also hadn't reached the kind of proportions that it has now, where it's epidemic. So, the second half of the 20th century, it was another story altogether, and a very sad one, because the drug companies decided that it was a single disease with a single cause, and they were looking for what we call monotherapy, a single magical drug that would make the disease go away. And they spent billions of dollars, $44.5 billion by one person's count, over the period of the 1970s till now. And this was a failed concept. They had something called the amyloid hypothesis that they were following up on. The fact that amyloid is deposited, you can see it under a microscope, deposited in the nerve tissue, made them believe that if they could just stop amyloid, they could stop Alzheimer's. And they, you know, tens of thousands of papers and researchers used that failed concept. We now know, and one of the things that happened just really in the past 10 years, and that Dr. Bredesen, the author of the paper I described, that he started using, and that we all now, all people that are doing what I'm doing now, believe, and that is that Alzheimer's is not one disease, and it does not have one cause. It is many different diseases with many different causes, and each person has a variety of symptoms unique to them, and a variety of causes unique to them. Now, there are only 15 or 20, depending on how you count, 15 or 20 actual cause categories, and we can talk about them if you want. But the trick for curing Alzheimer's is to find the cause in any given individual patient. And we do that by something called biomarker testing. It's really very straightforward, standard tests that laboratories do. In my book, a test order is presented that allows people to just copy and use that when they go to the lab. And these are not exotic tests, as I said. They're just standard tests that can be done. And based on the results of those tests and some other a little more involved tests, the causes can be determined. The biochemical, molecular, biological causes of the disease can be determined, and then from that, a treatment program that's unique and personalized for each patient is derived. And so that's how it works.
You mentioned, by the way, this difference between the medicine that you had seen and the what you call functional medicine that you saw in this study. Explain the difference.
Well, functional medicine is basically an attempt to, it's based on all the same research studies and all the same thinking processes that all doctors use. It's not some unique thing that way, but what we do in functional medicine is to try to identify the cause of the disease or causes of the disease, and in the person's own environment. And so that leads to a different way of thinking than if you're looking for a drug. Mm-hmm. And that's what the tests do. They tell us whether the person has what's contributing to their form of Alzheimer's, from their form of memory problems or Alzheimer's. It may be a low thyroid, it might be low vitamin D, or it might be a low vitamin B complex. Or it might be vascular dementia, in which the brain is being clogged by plaque. And I could go on and down the whole list, but basically we try to identify these causes, and each one of them has a very effective treatment. It takes time and effort, but there's a very effective treatment, and so the treatments are applied, and the person starts getting better. And then in addition to treating the causes, we also start the patient on a diet that is enhances brain function and prevents Alzheimer's, and we start them on an exercise program, and we start them on nutritional supplements that will enhance the brain's ability to heal.
So what is the recommendation then that you have sort of overall and the kinds of things that we should be looking at in terms of how we live our lives, whether it's nutrition or it's just simple exercise?
Well, so your question is lifestyle factors, and lifestyle factors have been prominent in the attempt to understand Alzheimer's and treat it. The book goes into, I mean, there are three basic categories, the ones I just mentioned, diet, exercise, and then supplements. So those, you can pretty much squeeze all lifestyle things into those three categories. For diet, the diet is a low-carb, very low-carb, because carbs and sugars are very damaging to the brain. It's a high-fat diet and moderate protein. And then we recommend autophagy, which is a daily, short fast every day to give the brain and the body a chance to clean up and heal itself and improve.
And then
there are specific foods that can help to enhance brain function. And those are all listed in the book.
Right. I mean, so is it that one of your recommendations, we'll get into some of the others, but the recommendation that people should in sort of generally, and particularly as they read the book, sort of incorporate all these then kinds of activities or measures that you're talking about to avoid it, or is it possible to reverse it as well with this kind of diet?
Well,
I mean, that's what people are going to be looking at.
Prevention is easier than treatment by far. And so I strongly encourage people, you know, we're all at risk. One in three of us will die with dementia unless we do something about it, and this is what to do. And there's no reason that 99.5% of all people can't die without dementia, or everyone can avoid dementia if they do the right things. It comes down to choosing the right lifestyle factors and then also doing the testing that I talked about to find our weak points, our metabolic shortcomings that need to be addressed. So, yes, for a person who's in prevent, so people are at different stages of the disease, in a sense. A person with a healthy, functioning brain just wants to be in prevention mode, whereas someone who's already starting to have memory problems would want to be more aggressive and be in what I'd call treatment mode. So for prevention, following the dietary recommendations and taking some of the supplements that are recommended would be plenty enough, and exercising every day, walking every day, doing those things would be enough. And I go in, again, there's a lot more detail about this in the book. I'm kind of glossing it over a bit. Prevention is far preferable. But and Dr. Bredesen has shown, and he's on hundreds of cases now, he's shown that even in the mid stage of Alzheimer's, where it's fairly far along, you can still reverse the disease by doing these things. And one of the reasons for that is that we now have an incredible discovery. It's called neurogenesis. It's really recent decade or two in medicine. And what neurogenesis is, it has to do with the fact that, you know, we used to think that once we got our brain, we were stuck with that brain and there was no fixing it or replacing parts. And now we know from our studies of neurogenesis that the brain can regenerate its own nerve cells. Neurogenesis means growing new nerve cells. And so when the brain is damaged by poor lifestyle choices, eating bad food, not exercising, getting exposed to toxins, the brain can heal from that. If you stop it, the insults to it and protect it that way, and then start eating the brain nutrients that stimulate neurogenesis, it can heal, and it will heal. And it does that throughout life to the very end. It's continually making new brain.
Let me ask you, let me just refer, one of the things you talk about, obviously, is diet. And if I'm reading it right, you're talking about removing, like, breads, pasta, baked goods, chips, snack foods, desserts, beer, wine, as you say, all those things that we love. The thing that really struck me about that is, one, how difficult it is for certainly people in this country to withdraw from some of those because they sort of a main staple. But secondly, we are bombarded continuously with advertising and enticements to eat all of these foods. How does one deal with the fact that it's sort of like, you know, walking through a den, as it were, and they're offering you things and you'd like to have them, and you're being lured into them. At the same time, you say, no, I can't do that. I mean, you know what I mean? There's a whole industry that's telling us eat all these foods.
Yeah. I mean, it's a huge problem, and I don't have a simple solution to it.
Right.
I think we have to start at the point of informing people. And if you look at the chapters on sugar in my book, you'll see the best argument I could put together based on all of the current research studies showing that sugar is like poison, and a high-carb diet are like poison to the brain. They really are. It's true. And if you read the research studies, you'll see that that's the case. So we can start with information. But you're right. I mean, it goes beyond what you said. It isn't just that we're bombarded with ads, and the whole culture is based on bread and flour based foods and sugary things. It goes deeper because our bodies in the genetic structure of our bodies gets programmed to crave these things too. Which, you know, I would say probably 20 years trying to get away from wheat and sugar, and I finally have, but I can tell you it's a struggle, and I've worked with many patients who have gone through the same thing. Some people can say, oh, okay, I won't eat that anymore, but those patients are few and far between. The ones who are typical have struggled with it, so... You brought up a really important problem, and I firmly believe that for at least some of us, knowing how it works and understanding how dangerous it is will be at least a good starting point for changing that.
I want to turn out to a couple of the vitamins you talk about, the B complex on the one hand, and also vitamin D. Explain how those work in terms of trying to keep Alzheimer's at bay.
Well, I do go into great detail about those in the book. And I'm good at taking complex biochemistry and turning it into something that the average person can understand. But to do it in a short conversation like this is almost impossible. B complex vitamins play roles in the health and vitality of nerve cells. And without adequate quantities of B complex coming into the body all the time on a regular basis, these are vitamins that don't stick around for very long, so we need to be really replenishing every day. And we do that by taking B complex pills in the form of vitamins, and we do it by eating a lot of vegetables. And and there are numerous studies. One of the more dramatic ones I talk about in the book, where they looked at people they compared two groups of people. One group had plenty of B complex vitamins, the other group had very few of the B complex vitamins, and the Alzheimer's rate was many times higher in the group that didn't have enough B complex vitamins. Vitamin D does different things metabolically. It's more involved in sugar metabolism, and it's really involved in almost every aspect of metabolism. It has to do with controlling where calcium goes in the body and it's very complicated. But the same thing is true with vitamin D. If you have a deficiency of vitamin D, and I tell you in the book what that is and how to test for it, a deficiency of vitamin C, the rates of Alzheimer's are incredibly higher when that occurs compared to people that have enough vitamin D.
What do you say to people who say, I take a daily vitamin every day? What do you caution them about?
Well, I would caution them about the source. There's a lot of junk from overseas that gets called vitamins that really shouldn't be. There's a lot of toxicity and a lot of low-quality products, so you have to be careful that way. I would not buy my vitamins from any kind of big-box store or any kind of large outlet. Professional quality vitamins are what we try to get everybody taking, and if they're doing that, they'll be getting the right products.
Should we be taking anything extra in addition then to our daily vitamins? Should we be taking any extra, say, vitamin B or vitamin D?
Yeah, there's a whole, the fourth part of my book is a set of chapters about nutritional medicines, we call them supplements, another word for supplements, that enhance cognitive functioning and that enhance the health of the brain and that stimulate that neurogenesis that I was talking about earlier. And these are things like curcumin, which is a major herb used in India, berberine, phosphatidylserine, EHA, docosahexaenoic acid, which is one of the fatty acids, lithium, which is a profound anti-dementia product. It's probably the most important supplement of all. And so I go into each of these various products and talk about these nutritional medicines, we call them, and talk about how each of them enhances brain function, and I go into the details of how they work and what they do and why they're so important to use.
Now, you also talk about gut microbiome. Tell me a little bit about what that is and how that fits into this overall picture.
Okay, well, the gut microbiome, there's a whole chapter on the gut microbiome, and it's one of my fascinations. The gut microbiome is a huge collection of bacteria, about 4 quadrillion by some counts, many times more bacteria in our intestinal tract than there are cells in our body. And up until very recently, we didn't know why they were there or what they were doing. We thought they were just munching on our food along with us. But it turns out that the microbiome, this trillions of hundreds of trillions of bacterial cells, play a huge role in our health. And the way they do it is by carrying DNA. Each of those bacteria has a DNA. And because there's so many more different kinds of bacteria there than there are types of cells in our body, they carry much more variety of DNA. In fact, the microbiome supplies around 95% of all the DNA that we use. So our own bodies have about 22,500 genes. The intestinal microbiome has about 1 million or more. And we use these genes to make things that we need. We need the microbiome to do the things that our bodies do. And the brain is intimately connected with the gut microbiome. It depends on the health of the gut microbiome to be healthy itself. And if you have inflammation or if you have intestinal symptoms, which can be gas, bloating, cramps, just indigestion, inability to process foods correctly, we call this dysbiosis. The microbiome gets upset. These colonies of healthy bugs get replaced by pathogenic bacteria that cause inflammation and symptoms, and the downstream effect of that is that the brain and other organs stop functioning optimally and start malfunctioning.
What has been the medical establishment reaction to your book and the idea that not only are you talking about prevention, but you're also talking about a potential reversing of Alzheimer's?
Well, it's varied. It's there's a very touchy subject for me right now because there is a certain amount of blowback. There are what I'll call flat earthers who think that this is, overblown and that it doesn't really work. But I went out of my way. I knew that this was coming as I was writing the book, and so everything I say is backed up with research studies upon research studies. There are over 1,000 references in the book. So I think it's, and for the same reasons that the medical community got stuck on the amyloid hypothesis and wasted all that time and money on a dead-end street, they're resistant to change. And you find that there's really bright lights at the end of the tunnel in some cases, and there are also these flat earthers who think that this is doesn't really work. So, and I was fortunate to have some of the best thinkers write testimonials for my book. Dr. Rudolf Tanzi is a professor of neurology at Harvard Medical School and a head of research at Massachusetts General Hospital. He said in his wonderful new book, Dr. Timothy Smith emphasizes that you are your own best healthcare advocate when it comes to staving off Alzheimer's disease. He reminds us that the choices we make every day about our lifestyle will play a huge role in determining our future brain health. More importantly, he expertly guides us on how to make these choices. So, and this is a guy who helped discover the human genome back in the 80s. He's a noted researcher, and he read my book and thought that it was definitely on the right track. So there are, and Dr. Dale Bredesen himself also wrote a testimonial from my book. He says it's the dawn of the era of treatable Alzheimer's and pre-Alzheimer's. And after more than a century of failure, reports are appearing documenting success after success. Reversing Alzheimer's by Dr. Timothy Smith provides clear explanations of the disease mechanisms and is a practical, useful approach to combat this scourge. I recommend this book wholeheartedly. So we do have some mainstream voices that are out there, and I think really, not to belabor the point, but the voices of reason will prevail. This is top-notch, high-level science. It's impossible to refute it. I mean, it's not based on speculation. It's based on research, basic science research and clinical research. So it'll take time. I think doctors and people in general have trouble wrapping their minds around, so to speak, new ideas, and this is a new idea.
We've been speaking with Dr. Timothy Smith. He's written a new book entitled Reversing Alzheimer's, How to Prevent Dementia and Revitalize Your Brain. We appreciate you taking the time to talk with us this morning.
Can I just say there's a lot more information at my website, timsmithmd.com.
Okay, that sounds good. And
Thank you so much.
I thank you for joining us. This has been Del Marva Today. I'm Don Rush. Thanks for listening.